Podcast, and tonight we've got kind of another futile one, I guess, for us. Another Steve McQueen possible classic. I don't know. A lot of people probably really don't know about this movie, would you say?
I would say you are correct, sir.
1980?
Yes.
What is it, his last?
No, it was his second to last movie.
What was his last?
The Hunter. Which I keep meaning to buy, but which was also a true story.
Interesting.
Where he's a bounty hunter.
Okay, I gotta see it.
Yeah, it has, and it has Eli Wallach and a few other people.
Okay, I gotta see it. I gotta see Steve McQueen as a bounty hunter. I'll have to get that one up at some point.
It is a pretty good movie.
Oh, sounds like it. Okay, so, this is a Western. I guess technically it would have to be a revisionist Western because it's not only is it taking place, has it been made after all the John Ford stuff and after the Peckinpah stuff. This is way after the Wild Bunch.
Yeah, and, this is like between Josie Wales and Pale Rider.
Yeah. So I guess this is a revisionist Western.
I would say so.
Yeah. Set 1901. Through 1903, it's about a 2-year period. It's kind of hard to tell, but a lot of stuff happens because a lot of stuff is just sort of shown happening in scenes. It's almost like a collection of recreations leading up to this final part. Almost, you know, like it's almost like a documentary about this trial.
Well, it is. It's based on the biography of
Tom Horn,
right? And I think it was probably the Coble, his employer.
John Coble, played by Richard Farnsworth from The Straight Story, the David Lynch film.
I always liked him in Misery.
Yeah, he was the sheriff, right?
Yep.
He's great. He just has such a... His voice has just got such a sincerity in it. You really like want to believe that he's an okay guy when he talks, for some reason.
You know, I think you were joking about The Natural earlier when you were looking at my movies.
No, I wasn't. He's in that too?
Yeah, he's in that too. He and Wilford Brimley are buddies.
Oh, interesting. Well, maybe we'll check that out then.
I think it's one of my top 5 favorite Westerns. Let's see.
Well, do you see it like as a companion to other... You mentioned that it stands alone as a Western, but...
Well, like I was saying, you can watch it and just to enjoy it without knowing any of the history.
Uh-huh.
But it's also... The great thing about this story is that it leaves... Not that I'm especially fond of artsy movies. I mean, a good movie is a good movie, and I don't really think about it that much further than that. But I do enjoy a lot of movies that don't completely deliver and they don't tie up all loose ends. And in this movie, it leaves you to, I mean, obviously the movie is kind of from the perspective of those who believe Tom Horn was innocent of the murder. And we haven't really, I mean, if you're not familiar with the story, you don't know what we're talking about, but, and we'll get to that. But you don't know. It doesn't, it just leaves it completely open.
It's true, it does, huh?
And historically, no one, I mean, the people that knew, never said anything. And I don't think Tom Horn ever emphatically denied that he did it either. He just kind of had a fuck you, go to hell attitude.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely an old school.
And you gotta realize also
take on that.
That I believe all the court scenes, that was all transcribed. That's actual
what he said.
Yes.
That's great. Because that
That's a tough, that's one hardcore son of a bitch.
So the Tom Horn is based on a true story, based on the autobiography. It's not right. An autobiography.
Tom Horn was
based
a
on
real
the
person.
He was a real person that was with TR and the Rough Riders.
Yes,
and
yes, he was.
He tracked down Geronimo and captured him and all that stuff, which was a big deal.
Yep.
He was a scout, right?
Yep.
Out on the old frontiers. And this story is about the latter part of his life when he's just sort of a unknown celebrity, only to a few people, and he's in Wyoming, living in the mountains.
Well, I think at the time he was probably fairly well known.
Well, those guys didn't know him at the beginning. That guy was the prize fighter and everyone. No one seemed to give a shit in that bar. It kind of established a pretense.
Oh, that is kind of interesting, but you got the impression that the guys in that bar didn't really see that much farther than themselves.
Exactly. But that's also the new society that's coming around.
Yes, it was.
And so,
I thought it was awful nice of him just not to shoot him.
Yeah, it was. I loved the opening where he's just like, well, you're not the champion yet, so I don't really get what's going on here.
If I beat you,
do I get to be the champion?
You're not big enough. Why are you picking on a little fella like me?
Yeah, exactly.
And you're kind of acting like an asshole.
No, it was great. So Tom gets into a bit of a scuffle with a guy, mainly just because he doesn't take shit from anybody, and that's great.
Well, yeah, he didn't have the proper respect for what this guy thought he was. What he thought he should...
Well, he's not the type to give undue respect to people that...
No, you aren't.
That posture it. Yeah. And so it costs him a little bit. He gets a little beat up. But then Richard Farnsworth comes out and says, hey, Tom, you know, I know of you, and I know you're this... Why are you sleeping in a stable? You've done all these, you know, big things. I want to hire you to come help me and my cattle organization prevent rustlers, because they've been having a problem with that. It seems like it would be something you could do.
You know, an interesting point of that is that scumbag U.S. Marshal Joe Bell asks him...
Yeah, he does.
Buffalo Bill's Wild West show.
Yeah.
And Tom Horn had been asked by him to be in it, and he wasn't interested.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of an interesting point in of itself. He wasn't looking to capitalize on his little bit of fame.
No, he was an authentic outlaw, libertarian style hero guy that just wants to be.
He was the Old West.
He wants,
in his words, he was the raggedy ass of the Old West.
He just wants to be free to go out into the mountains and do his own thing. And
when you think about really how hard a life that is in a lot of ways, and how self-reliant you have to be.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can't dial 911.
No, you get shot out in the street, and then you go and you take the guy out, and then you walk into the room, and then
society
looks
at you like you're, you know, the devil incarnate. And
you got to rinse the bullet out of your arm, and you know.
I know you're waiting for him to slap iron to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just and just keep on trucking, go out and finish his shopping.
Yeah, exactly. But old Tom decides that this seems like a reasonable thing. Farnsworth's a good guy, and this organization seems nice. It seems like a bunch of good people.
Could have been
lobster.
A lot better friend.
Yeah, he could have been, but. But he was naive about the sort of...
No, well, I mean, his livelihood's at stake, too.
Exactly.
He disagrees, but he still doesn't go against...
So basically they hire Tom to become a stock detective.
They hire Tom to kill off the wrestlers.
To kill off the wrestlers. Basically track them down and take them out. And he discusses that as sort of like, you want me to be like an assassin? And he has a little bit of a problem with it. But they tell him, hey, you do what you need to do. Like, kind of laying it all on him.
Yeah, they wash their hands of it.
Pretty much. And he understands that and decides, you know what, this is what he does. This is his life. and how things have been for him so far. So he goes, he tracks down the wrestlers, he basically gives them a, you guys are done with this. Okay? You're done. I know this is what I'm doing. I'll take you out if you keep doing this. They keep doing it. He takes them out. He does what he's hired to do.
Yeah, you think they'd start learning after a while.
But they don't. And this is like done in a sequence of things where you see him, you know, pretty brutally take out some people. But, I mean, you know, it's the Old West, and they're not going to pull any punches on, you know, what happens. And then after a couple of years, the Cattlemen's organization that hired him kind of surreptitiously, as they did, decides, you know, hey, this is kind of
doing too good of a job.
This is kind of embarrassing to us if it's like we've got this guy.
Because everybody knows he's working for them.
Well, they all pretty much figure it's like, well, you know what? We need to wash our hands of this guy. We need to get rid of him. And Farnsworth, like, knows about that. He knows, okay, so how are they going to do it? And then the way that this ends up happening, according to the story, is that Horn is set up as being the guy that shot this kid, the shepherd
kid. Which was
kid.
Very convenient for them.
Uh-huh.
Because they were still, because Horn hadn't solved that problem for them. They still had these poor people grazing sheep on their land, their cattle land.
Yeah.
Which is their pastures for their cattle, so then they can't use that land.
Yeah, it becomes a whole ownership thing of land, and I mean, they get into that in Shane and stuff too, where the guy
Tom
takes Horn over.
Hadn't done anything about it, so not only did they take care of the problem with him, but they solved their
sheep squatters, yeah,
by killing a 14-year-old.
Indeed. So the rest of the film is basically just them conspiring to kind of get Tom to pin this on him and shame him, and essentially, I mean, he's it's a story that's been told many times where the society has no use for you anymore, and so they're embarrassed by you and your stalwart sort of approach to freedom and your fuck you attitude, and so they make a public spectacle of you, and they destroy you.
Society is pretty.
I mean, this is a very subversive film. I mean, it isn't outwardly intensely subversive, but it's
not a great reflection on society as a whole.
It's not a great reflection on the marshals.
It shows how dishonest society really is, and there's a lot of truth in that.
But, I mean, at the same time, you've got people like Slim Pickens, who's like the local sheriff.
But they don't do anything about
it. They're, you know, their hands are tied, as it were, you know. They bring in somebody when the legal people have got a rationale for it.
They're just following orders.
Yep, it's the Nuremberg thing. And then all the feds, you can tell, are pieces of shit. You know, in that scene where they chase him down, like, and they beat him with ropes.
This is like, you know, the 1903 version of Waco and Ruby Ridge and all that shit. Hell, it even takes place in Wyoming.
Yeah.
I guess that was Idaho. Texas.
Yeah. But, so, I mean, really, that's just, I don't think we need to spoil the actual ending. I mean, if you know, but you said you read something about the
a book about
the actual event.
Yeah, I was looking through some books on the Old West, and
I mean, did they have anything more than just the gun? It was the same gun that he used to carry, that was used to kill the kid.
Well, I have no idea. That's what they said, that it was a .45-60.
So it's all pretty like
it never made a whole lot of sense to me, because that shot would have been virtually impossible.
Yeah.
It was like 225 yards.
Well, how would they have known
like
where the guy was standing? Because they found the shell casing and they just kind of extrapolated from that?
I'm guessing that's what... I'm assuming that, yeah, there was some sort of evidence left behind. But that shot is just 150 yards with a 30-30 is a pretty... 200 yards is a pretty damn fine shot. Almost, you'd have to be a really good shot to pull that off. And a 45-60 is a lot less, has a much less flat trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
You'd literally it'd literally be like a rainbow. It'd be like you'd have to throw it over there like that. It'd be like if you'd be bombing the guy, the kid. It, yeah. The effective range on a 45-60 would be like 100 yards tops.
That's why Tom probably uses it. I mean, he figures if someone's within that range and he can hit him, then that's cool. And if they're not, then they probably can't hit him. And if they're on their way out, then if they've made it that far, fine. That kind of seems like his approach, maybe. But yeah, so it's based on a true story. I don't know about all the facts of the case and everything, but it's an interesting, quick little story about this guy and sort of what happens to him and how he's treated by the burgeoning corporate / you know, governmental federal connection there, you know.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you were saying that it's sort of subversive, and it is an interesting reflection on society for their total lack of the past, total lack of reflection on the past, or what was done, and what was sacrificed, and what was taken away, and what was burned and pillaged, and whatever else,
yeah,
to pave the way for their bright, shiny future, for their shopping malls, for their refrigerators and televisions. A lot of horrible things happen to make that possible, and society generally doesn't want to take any responsibility for that. And when they do, it's so cookie cutter.
Well, it's
peace sign, living in a tree bullshit that it has absolutely no meaning.
It's counterproductive.
It's counterproductive, and it's really insulting in a way.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it's sort of a no-win scenario.
Because it's a harsh world. But that doesn't mean that you have to completely ignore the fact that things had to be done, they weren't pretty, and people generally want to turn their backs on those that made it possible. Which was a great point of Tom Horn. Tom, like Richard Farnsworth is telling him, a lot of people like to, what did he say? Or a lot of people don't realize or don't remember that it was people like Tom Horn that made this new society possible.
Yep.
Or tamed the frontier.
Tamed the frontier for whatever that's worth.
And it's a great transitional period. There's a few Westerns. Another one of my favorite John Wayne Westerns, which is called Big Jake,
mm-hmm.
which was one of the later ones he did. It was right around this. Actually, I think it was after. It was after True Grit and Rooster Cogburn. I think it was in the early 70s, but it was right around that same time frame, early 1900s. But that's a fascinating time period because of the shift in the old
yeah,
past.
And that's when the big one with what's his name? I'm blanking on it. The Wild Bunch came
yep.
out. Wild Bunch is the same sort of storyline.
You know, I only actually watched that once.
They're anti-heroes for sure.
Yeah, that was
because they're bank robbing murderers.
I didn't really know what to think about that. It seemed to me like a perverted version of The Magnificent Seven.
Pretty much was.
And, you know, William Holden, I really didn't understand. And then, I mean, it's just, the characters, it was so bizarre to me as a Western that it almost seemed plausible. But I still didn't like it.
Yeah, yeah, it's problematic in its analysis and in the way to actually go through it, but it's a good
There's
film.
Lots of flies, though, so that was
a lot
good.
Of flies, a lot of violence, ultra-violence, which they use a little in this movie. They had a little bit of, Tom Horn had a little bit of violence. There's the shotgun.
Well, when you blow somebody's head off with a shotgun, it's not going to be pretty.
Nope, and they let you know that it's not going to be pretty. They drop the F-bomb in this. I mean, this movie kind of, like, it doesn't flaunt itself, but, like, it has a little bit of, like, an R-rated quality to it, even though you wouldn't expect it to.
Rent Tom Horn or look it up, download it if it happens to be.
Get it on Netflix or streaming video on demand or whatever.
I didn't have any trouble buying it. I think pretty much all Steve McQueen movies except for The Anatomy of the People are pretty easy to find.
Anyway, yeah, it's a good movie. If you like westerns, if you like movies about characters kind of that are loners and individualists types, then you'll probably like it.
And you know what's interesting too? It's pretty quick too. He's not antisocial.
No, he's not. I mean, and that's the thing where, I mean, like, if we want to get back to the film a little bit, where we could talk about, other than some structuring issues that I had with the film and the way it kind of tried to incorporate this romance with this woman, which I thought was good, but the way they did it was with flashbacks for the most part, and it didn't feel quite. It didn't. The structure.
Well,
was
you
a
know,
haywire.
I get the impression. Sometimes it feels like two different movies a little bit.
You get the impression they did some reshoots.
Well, I think that the director. I got. You know, remember we were looking that up last time.
Yeah.
It looked like the director of Electric Light Blue started the project and got fired.
Or who knows what. Either he got fired or just had to leave.
Which, interestingly enough, is what happened with Outlaw Josie Wales, which is why Clint Eastwood ended up directing it.
Yeah, so it definitely feels like there's some problems with the structure there. But for the most part, yeah, he's like a good guy.
Well, there's no pretensions about him.
No, there aren't, and that's what I like about him. And he's
what you see is what you get.
He's a nice fellow, and he,
he's portrayed that way in the movie. I've read that maybe he's a little more rough around the edges.
That's very likely. I mean, you know, on a day to day basis, I would imagine so.
But they certainly didn't try to portray him as eloquent.
No, they didn't try to cheapen him or anything. I mean, he's not the smartest guy in the world, but he's smart about things.
Well, he'd have to be pretty damn street smart.
Oh, yeah, but street smart when they didn't have streets.
No, but he had people shooting at him.
Exactly.
How much more street does it get?
That's it's pretty rural. Probably had to fight off some cougars, too. And not the kind that people have to fight off nowadays.
Well, I don't think Miss Schoolteacher was necessarily a cougar, but that was another thing that I liked in the movie was that the leading lady, who, this is I was trying to remember the leading lady, and I can't remember her name off the top of my head, was Steve McQueen's third and final wife. And I can't remember if they were married before the movie or after. But I like the fact that the leading lady was not 20.
Yeah, she was an older woman, and it fit with the story. It fit that she'd had some adventures, and she had a certain mentality, and he could see that in her, and he appreciated that, and that's what he kind of wanted. He wasn't just
It was interesting
looking for some POA.
In this movie, it was interesting that she had a lot of insight that he didn't share. And in some ways, she was, I guess she didn't really mentor him, but she, it was a more equal relationship in a way.
Well, she was no dummy.
No.
No, it was a nice little thing, and there was only little bits of it here and there, but it was nice to have that, and I felt like you didn't really get the payoff of her presence at the end.
No, you didn't.
And that was kind of maybe too bad. And maybe it would have been really melodramatic, and it might have, but it just sort of seemed odd that she wasn't there.
This movie was certainly not melodramatic.
No, it wasn't, and that's what I also liked about it.
In a gritty Western, you can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, you can be cynical as all hell now and look at all the gritty Westerns and dismantle all those sort of mythological characters as caricatures
like
and all that and do that And you could certainly do that with this film if you were so inclined. But I would say that it's not this mythological... Well...
I'm trying to see which character was... and I'll agree that there was... This movie, there are two sides to this.
Yeah.
There's the side that believes he did it, and there's the side that believes he didn't. And this movie was obviously based on...
Yeah, it takes his side.
It takes his side, but it doesn't...
It doesn't make him seem like someone he wasn't, but, you know, he doesn't seem terribly flawed either. I mean, he likes his whiskey, and he maybe is a little
from the standpoint uppity. Of looking at him as a gunfighter.
Yeah, exactly. But the real question is just, are characters like this, the sort of characters that people look at now and laugh at for their simplicity or whatnot?
Laugh at for his simplicity, I guarantee you. Most of those people laughing wouldn't last a week.
I'm not saying that that makes them good for it. I'm not saying that that makes them right. I'm not saying that's the kind of person I would like.
That just makes them fucking ignorant.
Exactly. But, and so, yeah. If you look at Tom Horn... and you laugh at him, then you're not paying attention. And that's probably the best way to leave this review. I'd have to give it just a regular B because of some of the structuring issues. But it's quick enough, and it's definitely a good story. It's not an up story. It's not an upbeat story.
No, it's not.
But it's very matter of fact, and yeah. I would say check it out. If you haven't seen it, you should see it, see it pretty quickly.
And I just tend to enjoy watching Steve McQueen. And it was really interesting, in the last few movies he did, there was a change, and he got, in a way, softer.
Yeah.
And,
that's good.
Well, it's interesting to throughout his career. There are some obvious changes.
He's a badass for a lot of his career, and in this, he's a badass, but he's got nothing left to prove.
Nope.
I think if he had tried to do this, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he had this story waiting for a while, and he wasn't ready for it. You know, in the Bullet days, he wouldn't have played right to play this character. He needed that age. He needed that wisdom maturity. And experience and that maturity, because I mean, this is not Tom Horn catching Geronimo. This is Tom Horn after he's done all that. After he's weary of that. He's experienced that. After he's looking at this evolving, some say devolving society where people walk around calling themselves the champion having done nothing. And I mean, the theme of the movie is just so perfectly encapsulated in that first couple of scenes with him and his interaction with this guy on his way to San Francisco to, you know, have a good old boxing match and become the new champion, heavyweight champion of the world. To call that the world, champion of the world.
You know, again, I kind of selected it because to me, I mean. I'll give it a 4. That's just from my personal.
You give it a B too. You got your 5-star system. So B plus.
5-star gives me a little more range. I have 3 and 4. Because 2 and 1, 1 is obviously like They Live. I'd give They Live a 2.
Okay, I can see that. But see, I can translate that to like a B minus.
How the fuck is
maybe,
that?
Maybe. Okay, you know what? It's not a B minus. It's more like a C.
That's 40%.
Yeah, maybe stars are a better system.
That's an F. You could squeeze that to a D.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a high F.
Good point.
But 4, in my opinion, you could float that 75 to 85. You know, in the course of 5 is a straight up A.
4.5 is what you got there.
You could do that. 3.5. I didn't even think about doing halves, but... in my rating system, it's dear to my heart. I'm biased and all, but...
Okay, then let's do that. We'll have a new rating system.
Who?
The funniest thing for me about Friday the 13th is not even something that... It's something in the movie, but it's not something I noticed. It's something Seth noticed. We were watching it one Friday the 13th, a marathon on TNT, the 8th one.
Oh,
and the way that it starts is that there's this boat in Camp Crystal Lake that's like going to end up like
there in the Atlantic. There was a part in that that freaked me out when I was a kid. The part where the chick is trapped in that little thing and he finds her.
Yeah.
And there's nowhere for her to go, and he's just slowly lowering his harpoon down.
It's creepy.
That is creepy.
This is just before, this is just after I think all that happens. It's basically like, so Jason is like hanging onto the anchor, you know, on this boat, and then there's a shot of him, and he kind of, he comes out of the water, and he peers around, and then he goes back under the water, and Seth's like, oh my god, did you see that? I'm like, no, what's going on? He's like, he reasoned. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, by the eighth, and then Seth's like, by the eighth one, Jason can reason. He looked around, he figured out, no, now's not the good time for me to come out. And he reasoned, he came to a rational decision about when the murderings should proceed. And it's just hilarious to see Jason, the eighth one's where Jason reasons.